This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
At least 11 people have died climbing Mount Everest in one of the worst climbing seasons in history. The pictures of long queues near Everest summit have led to some questioning how access to the mountain is being managed by the Nepalese authorities. And it's not just Everest that's claimed lives. Earlier this week, 8 climbers, including Australian Ruth McCain, disappeared while attempting to climb Nanda Devi, India's second highest peak. Just today, 5 bodies were spotted by an aerial survey crew. Authorities suspect that the climbers were caught in an avalanche. So what's causing this chaos, and is climbing mountains really worth it? Well, our next guest can tell us.
At the age of 20, Cason Crane became the first openly gay man to complete the 7 summits. That's climbing the highest peak on each of the 7 continents. And he did it all to raise money for an LGBTIQ+ mental health hotline in the United States. Earlier this week, Toby Halligan spoke to Cason on the phone from his home in New York and began by asking what his reaction was to the pictures of the chaos at the top of Everest.
Well, I had a couple reactions. I mean, the first one, of course, is you know, jog my own memory, because I also saw a similar sight at various points when I was climbing Everest in 2013. The day before my group went up for the summit, from when we were hiking from Camp 3 or climbing from Camp 3 to Camp 4, we were stuck in a very similar line. So the first emotion it brought back was this kind of that memory of being stuck in line, and the almost fear and desperation you feel when you are in that line, because you know it's dangerous to stray from it, and you're so motivated to keep going, but you know your toes start to get cold and your fingers start to get cold. It can be very scary. But then, of course, I had additional thoughts and feelings as I reflected on the photos I've been seeing. You know, obviously, there are more climbers than have ever been headed to the summit of Everest, more permits issued this year to Western climbers. I was also, you know, as I read more about it, there were very few weather windows this year. Mm-hmm. And a series of factors came together to create that environment that has tragically resulted in the deaths of, I think, 11 climbers so far this season.
Mm.
Lots of feelings.
Just for our audience, what is the weather window?
So when people climb Everest, typically the vast majority of people climb it in April and May, and that's because it's out. You know, you've passed through the winter, so it's a bit warmer, quite a bit warmer, and then you also that window that time in early May and mid May tends to be the best time to avoid the very strong winds that flow over the top of Everest in the summer months. So really, April and May are the only months that people climb or attempt to climb Everest. Occasionally people will try September, October. That's the only other kind of shoulder period. And so what that means is you get to Everest base camp in about mid-April, and then you have, you know, 3 to 6 weeks to let your body acclimatize to the extremely high altitude. And so that typically entails doing circuits up the mountain. So, you know, for example, when I climbed it, we went halfway up the mountain and then back down to base camp, and then 3/4 of the way up to the mountain and then back down to base camp. And only then did we go up for our summit bid. Mm. So when we summited, I summited on May 21st, 2013. So there was in that month of the middle of May, there were probably half a dozen really great weather days. So other expeditions that had acclimatized at a similar pace could go up on any one of those days. That helped to spread out the summits, so there weren't as many crowds. But even still, on my own summit day, there were almost 100 climbers going up for the summit that day. It was one of the most popular days. Mm. And so it was in many ways similar to the environment on the summit of Everest the last couple of days or earlier this week.
So you climbed Everest a few years ago, and even then you were reflecting that there were quite large queues. Just from the pictures of Everest, it's now becoming littered with trash and, tragically, literally human bodies. What do you think needs to change?
Well, that's a really great question, and that's certainly something that my friends and colleagues have been asking me, especially in the last couple of days. I think it's important to balance, obviously, you know, limiting to some degree the number of people who get permits to climb Everest. That is something that the Nepali government could do, with the reality that, you know, in this particular year, there were a confluence of factors that resulted in the tragic deaths we've seen in the last week or two. Because I think at the end of the day, restricting people's access to nature and to the outdoors is just inherently limiting, right? Like, I would love if everyone in the world could have the opportunity to climb Mount Everest if they so chose, because it's an incredibly emotional and just stunning environment that can be transformative. I know certainly when I got to the top, I was absolutely like humbled by the majesty of it, the beauty of it. And so I tend to shy away from restricting permit access. And I think, you know, we're going to have to take a long, hard look at this year and see, you know, maybe that is something that needs to be done. Maybe they do need to limit it. But I think there are other factors that the media has not been focusing on as much. I think one of those factors is the proliferation of very kind of bare bones operators on Everest that are, I think, to be honest, kind of suckering people in or catering to people who aren't as experienced, they're not as familiar, and using that lower price point to entice them into what is, I think, ultimately a less safe operation. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that really needs to be looked at. And the last thing I will say is that, though obviously it is incredibly tragic whenever somebody dies in the mountains, it's also important to consider that these people recognize that that was a possibility when they climbed that. I can speak from my own personal experience and from that of my climbing friends and buddies that whenever you go to a mountain, or especially a big mountain like Everest, you accept the possibility that you could get injured or potentially die, because it's an inherently risky sport. It's an inherently risky endeavor. And so I think it's important to recognize that, at least I would hope that most of these people can at least take some comfort in the idea that these people lost their lives in a place that they were incredibly affected by, and a place that they wanted to be. You know, they cared about the outdoors, and they at least got to spend their final moments there.
The reason you began climbing the seven summits was to raise funds for the Trevor Project. So your climbs were called the Rainbow Summits Project. Can you tell us a bit about what drove you to pursue that project?
Absolutely. So the Rainbow Summits Project was probably the most important thing I've done in my life so far. I lost a very dear friend of mine to suicide in high school. And when I graduated, and I desperately wanted a way to commemorate her, and also to try and make sure I could do whatever I could in my power to prevent that from happening to another young person. And as I'm sure you and many of your listeners know, suicide is a particularly big problem in our LGBTQI community. And so I had been familiar as a volunteer with the Trevor Project. I had volunteered for them, and they are doing such incredible work as the United States' only 24/7 free and confidential suicide lifeline directed towards the LGBTQI community. And so I decided, I tried to brainstorm what could I do to raise awareness and raise money for this cause. And in my mind, I just drew this connection between suicide and prevention, suicide prevention, and the challenges that young people, especially young LGBTQI people, face, and the kind of the metaphorical struggle of climbing up a mountain and putting one foot in front of the other, one day at a time. And so I decided to combine my passions and climb the seven summits in order to raise money and awareness for that cause. Mm-hmm. And it luckily caught on, and I was able to speak to thousands of young people across the United States and the world about the importance of suicide prevention and communicating with your peers and your friends and your loved ones and making sure, you know, that they know that you're there always. And then I was also able to raise $135,000 for this nonprofit. Mm.
That was Carson Crane speaking to Toby Halligan. For an extended version of that interview, have a listen to the Informer podcast. And while you're there, why not subscribe?
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.